Hello and welcome to episode 71 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. You can find the show every week on iTunes, MTGCast, and our home site, cardhoarder.com. You can check out other content like Magic Online guides and Team Card Hoarder articles. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with round-the-clock customer service. My name is Connor. I'm the host and editor for the podcast. No Nathaniel this week, but joined as I am always by my tag team partner, Mr. Dave C. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Connor.
How's things?
Good, good. Well, okay, life is great as always, but I'm coming to be known on the stream as Two Tree Dave, which isn't great for my wallet in league results, but let's hope Ixalan treats me a bit better next week.
Yeah, man, I'm excited for the new set. Standard, it seemed like a decent format, but watching you play Standard, I'm like, all right, I'm ready for a rotation.
Yeah, you got to be optimistic. You know, Two Tree, it's not a great result, but it's better than what one of my good friends was calling me after the Pro Tour, which was Wall of Fate Dave, the 05. Moving on up, I guess.
You're up to my level, you know. I'm usually a 1-4, 2-3 player, so.
I don't know if I can ever be at your level, Connor, but I'll keep trying.
Whoa. Anyways, let's not talk about how bad that we are in Magic, because we have an amazing show lined up this week. We have another very special guest joining us on the line. You may recognize her voice from the weekly Magic podcast, Magic Mics, or way back from 2014 from the Community Cup team. She is a lover of all things associated with Dredge. We have the newly crowned Cardholder Community Manager on the podcast, Erin Campbell, ladies and gentlemen. Erin, thanks for joining us and congratulations.
Oh man, thank you so much. I should have you announce me everywhere I go. That was wonderful.
I mean, Erin, I'm taking the page from your book, basically. You know that. You know that, right?
Is there like a tour rider like that I don't know about? Like what?
I mean, so what I'm referencing here is like, I mean, I'm really excited to have you on for multiple reasons. Like,
oh, thank you.
Now that I've had both like my podcast mentors on the show, like I've had like an achievement unlocked. The other mentor being like KYT, of course. And you're like the other one. I'm basically taking your inspiration from the deck tees and how you start interviews.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. It's incredibly sweet of you. I just don't think of it's wild that you would say that because I just don't think of myself in those terms, I guess, where like I always just kind of dance like nobody's watching. And it's always surprising to me when people were watching or are watching. I never really know what to do with that.
Yeah, we're always listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was always a fan of the deck tees, and that really, it was one of my favorite Magic podcasts while being on the road for SCG. So it just always connected with me. I always like interview podcasts, but we'll talk about that more later. We got to talk about your community manager position at cardorder.com. As I said in your intro, congratulations. What does this new job entail? Because I know most of your tasks are probably a little obvious to some listeners, I would say. But for instance, like, will you be creating new content for the website?
It's actually a really good question. I've had a number of people ask me what it's going to entail. So I'm going to be doing a number of things for Card Hoarder. The first thing I'm going to be doing is actually engaging with customers and the community as the voice and personality of Card Hoarder. So I will be responding to tweets, engaging in discussions on Reddit. If people have had, hopefully they haven't, but if they've had any negative interactions through, you know, the bots or through the online service, it'll be my job to sort of work with them and, you know, try to get them to come back around and de-escalate those situations. I will be creating periodic content, like articles, newsletters, communication materials, things like that. If Card Hoarder is engaging in any sort of promotions, I know that there's been some talk of maybe some charity efforts or charity drives. It'll be my job to sort of roll that out and make sure people know about that. I'll be dealing with the stream team, make sure that we have a good team, respond to applications from people who want to join the team, make sure that the people we already have are being promoted and that they're using the cards the way that they should be. Working with the paper team, making sure that you know who those people are, that you want to root for them, that you're following them, and just basically making sure that, you know, Card Hoarder's out there, that you know who we are, and that you're rooting for us, basically.
Oh, that's gonna be a lot on your plate, Erin. But that sounds great. That sounds really exciting, though.
Yeah, it's not too different from, you know, what you do as just a visible member of the community. You know, as somebody who's had multiple podcasts and, you know, I understand promotional cycles and I understand branding and I understand networking and dealing with listeners and, you know, trying to win people back if maybe they're not fans anymore, or just trying to get people to know who you are. And, you know, there are things I've really just been doing anyways for the last 5 years. And it'll really just be a matter of applying all of that on a larger scale.
Right. So as you talk about your involvement with the Magic community for the past 5 years, you've also worked a 9-to-5 job, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. And whether it's been through like podcasts, Community Super League, Vintage Super League, which we'll get into later, you also stream on Twitch. Has working full-time in Magic been your long-term goal, or was this just an opportunity that you thought you'd try out?
A little of both, actually. I think for any content creator, the goal is to be able to quit your day job and go full time. The sad reality is that content creation doesn't pay very well. I mean, let's just call it like it is, you know. YouTube pays a pitiful amount, you know, for page views and things like that. And especially recently, there's been a lot of changes. Podcasting certainly doesn't make a lot of money. There's certainly rare exceptions, you know, if you are like a Marshall Sutcliffe or a professor or something like that. But the average content creator has to have some other form of income, usually in the form of a day job. You can't really do it full time. And so being a podcaster for 5 years, I've certainly benefited from my shows, but I was never at a point where I could do this full time. And so when this opportunity came around and I started doing well in the interview process and I got invited back for a second interview and things like that, it really became a reality that I could just do magic full time. And that would be, that's definitely a milestone for me, you know, to think that I've gotten to the point where I can quit my day job and just do magic related things, I think is a dream for anybody who, you know, is a creator, because, you know, it's so rare that you can do that.
Judging from your Twitter posts, this is a big step in your life too. I can kind of tell.
Yeah, it's a little scary. You know, it's exciting, but at the same time, it's like, you know, my job is very safe. You know, I worked for JP Morgan Chase for 7 years, and, you know, barring any really unusual circumstances, you know, mortgages will always be here and home equity will always be here. And, you know, you really don't have to worry about that. But when you make magic your job, you know, you are subject to the changing community. You know, you hope that magic does well and you hope magic online does well. And, you know, you hope that the economy is stable, but you know, anything that happens, you do take the brunt of. I'm really, really excited, you know, but there's a little part of me that I'm not a spontaneous person. You know, I'm normally the planner of my group and, you know, this is very unlike me. And so there's a little part of me that's like, you know, not in control, not in control. And so I'm just hoping for the best.
This is a situation I know all too well because, I mean, for myself, I quit my safe 9-to-5 job that I had for, 5 to 6 years, pretty much like yourself. And then I moved away from my girlfriend, who's now my wife, to work for SEG. I didn't know really anybody personally. I mean, it was just what you were saying, huge change in my life. I usually do plan things out because I come from a world of like filmmaking. You want to plan everything to a T. And you're right. Moving into magic as a career, you don't know what Wizards is going to do. When I came into SEG, it was all legacy, 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 legacy. And we did, you know, Grand Prix New Jersey, one of the like the biggest Grand Prix ever for Constructed and just in general. And that was a legacy GP. And then right after that, they basically just cut the cord on legacy almost per se. And that's a shame too. I mean, like, you're kind of mercy to what Wizards can do. And that's not really a knock on Wizards because the game changes every year. But that also just makes it great. And that's what the best part about the game is.
But I think it also says something about your prior circumstance. Like, I haven't been happy at my day job for a really long time. And so,
I wasn't either.
So when you're unhappy enough to where you're willing to sort of take that gamble, you know, when you're saying, you know, I can stay here and make a gaggle of money and be miserable, you know, or I can do this thing that might blow up in 2 years. But, you know, if it means, you know, I'm happier than I am now, then I'm willing to take that risk.
Well, it sounds like you're in a good place then.
Yeah.
Good. So what are you looking to achieve with this position as community manager? Like, do you have a particular vision for Cardholder as a business and maybe a pillar of the community?
I think Cardholder certainly has established itself already as a pillar. Like, I think, you know, this came up in the interview, you know, I think that we're doing things that I don't see any other bot chain really do. The fact that we have a paper team, you know, a team of people who play, you know, with our brand name on their jerseys and represent us. I don't really see any of the other bot chains really doing that. You know, the fact that we have blogs and content and things like that, we're doing so many things that are already sort of ahead of the curve. And I just want to make sure that we keep doing that. You know, I want to make sure that we are visible and that we keep breaking new ground. And, you know, I know there's some things that I don't know if I can talk about yet that are in the pipe, but those are also going to be very, you know, rare for a bot chain to be doing. And I just want to make sure that we continue to be innovative and fresh and that we are sort of on the front lines. Whenever a discussion comes out about Magic Online, I want to make sure that we're there and we're talking about it and that we're steering the conversation and that we are a factor. And just really just kind of, applying everything I've learned over these last 5 years. I've been a casual player. I've been a competitive player. I've known people who work inside of Wizards. I've known people who are sort of independent and do their own thing. And I've seen a lot, and I just sort of look forward to applying that to a business and helping a business be better, and certainly helping myself be better as well.
I don't know how to phrase this that well, so stop me if it's not great phrasing. But how important do you think it is for organizations like Cardholder to kind of be creating employment, not only on the content side, but, you know, they have you as a brand manager now, they have they're paying people to play Magic, they're sponsoring a team.
I think in this day and age, you really have to be, you know, I keep using the word visible. It's like, you really have to be putting yourself out there. You know, it's not enough to simply be on one form of social media. It's like nowadays you need to have a Twitter, you need to have a Facebook, you need to be on Reddit, Snapchat is an option, Instagram is an option. You know, it's not a coincidence when you see some of the most successful streamers out there that they have that little toolbar on the bottom with four or five different icons where you can find them. You know, you really need to make sure that you are being seen, because the conversation changes so fast. It's very easy for people to forget about you. It's very easy for people to move on from you. It's very easy for somebody to steal, you know, the attention or steal the spotlight. So it's very important that I think, you know, Cardholder maintains that spotlight, and any business maintains that spotlight. Because again, you know, if you miss a conversation, or if you, you know, you aren't part of something, somebody else is going to sort of take that from you. And so it's very important that, you know, businesses do that. And I see a lot of people who, even content creators, you know, I see a lot of content creators who just aren't part of the discussion, where it's like, you know, they don't promote themselves. They don't engage with their listeners or their fans. And I think in this day and age, that's a really, really big mistake. And so I think it's a good thing that Cardholder wants to work on that and wants to improve on that, because I think a lot of businesses don't think about that until it's too late.
Yeah, that reminds me of, I was just listening to a wrestling podcast, and it was basically the same thing. It was just being successful in a business, and in their context, a wrestling business, it was just, I need to put myself out there as much as possible. By that way, I have to be noticed. If I wrestle this many shows, my name is just going to get out there as much as possible. They're just going to see my name, and they're like, oh, well, this person's name has been out there so much that they have to be more credible. Obviously, it's a different circumstance when we're talking about like social media, but I think that just is the day and age right now where we have just access to all this information.
Yeah, and it's definitely something I feel very passionate about. I remember there was some kerfuffle a while back I think it might have been a Mox or some sort of championship that was happening at Wizards. And I remember there was some flack that people were going, well, we didn't even know that the event was happening. And they were putting all of the blame on Wizards. And they were like, well, Wizards didn't promote it, everything. And I was like, you know, I think that's certainly part of the problem. But look at all these other people who didn't even tweet that they were going. Like, mm-hmm. You know, when I'm at a GP, you know I'm at a GP. Like, I'm hashtagging, I'm taking pictures, you can find me. And it was really surprising to me to see everybody say, well, it was all Wizards' fault. I'm going, well, I'm sorry, but you also had a dozen people who didn't tell a soul that they were there. And I think it kind of goes both ways. I think, you know, it's up to Wizards to promote the event. But if you're going and you're already a content creator and you want someone to see you, that's a huge opportunity for you too. Yeah, I'm very passionate about people sort of, you know, promoting themselves. And I love to poke at my friend Jadine Klomperens, because for the longest time, she never tweeted her articles and I would do it for her. And then she would just retweet it. And now that she's part of Star City, she tweets out her links regularly. And I'm just like, good girl.
Nice. Yeah, it's so weird. Some Magic players, they just don't even have a Twitter account either. Not that they don't post. Some just don't have an account. This day and age, it appalls me. Just how much information you can get from Twitter and how many conversations that are like very gratifying to be a part of a lot of times. I mean, it's obviously some parts that you don't want to see ever, but you know, Twitter is a great experience. I mean, I used Twitter more once I got into the Magic community.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to one person in particular who really stepped up their game in that regard. Brian Brown Duin has come a really long way in that regard. I remember when I first had him on the deck tees a while back, he had just won GP Louisville, I think, with the
Black Devotion
list. And I remember he had done my show, and then he did a show with Robert Martin, I believe, who was on GatheringMagic.com at the same time. And he didn't promote either of those. And at first, I thought it was just me. I was like, well, maybe he just didn't really, you know, care for his appearance, and that's totally fine. But then he did another show, and I was like, he's not going to promote it. Like, and now, like, he plugs his articles, he's on Facebook, and he's come a really long way, and I'm super proud of him. But, you know, for a while there, like, he was somebody who just didn't grasp the concept. And I think it's not a coincidence that, you know, his profile has increased because of it. You know, his winning has certainly helped. But I think part of that is the fact that he got hip to promoting himself and putting himself out there, and he's certainly benefited from doing so.
Definitely. He just had more confidence in himself as well, as far as like maybe just the losing weight part, but handling himself as a content creator as well, because I got to film his videos and I saw the transformation like before my eyes. It's a really cool thing to be a part of, because now he's, you know, the world champion, and he deserves you don't deserve to be the world champion, but he's a good representative of world champion in the game of Magic.
Absolutely.
Well, I think Brian is a perfect example, because no offense to Brian. Amazing Magic player, like world-class Magic player. There are, I would say, some better Magic players out there that you would know less. Mm-hmm. Like that are just, I know people that have gone to gold or maybe snuck into platinum, and if you told someone that, they wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of Magic players, unlike Brian, they view themselves as solely players, but they don't really see that only 5-10 people in the world actually make full-time living off their Magic winnings, if even. And you need to be putting yourself out there. We had Jerry on the show 2 weeks ago. Two weeks ago. And he talked about the same thing. You can't just do it on Magic winnings. You're not a poker player. You can't. You need to be putting yourself out there all the time.
Yeah, that's a really good perspective too. The idea of sort of diversifying your portfolio. You know, one thing I learned from doing the deck tease is that careers are short, careers are fast. And, you know, I interviewed people that we don't talk about anymore. I mean, to be perfectly honest. And so, you know, you need to have a backup plan. And again, going back to branding and saying, you know, am I just going to write articles? No, you see the guys who are getting into other avenues, they're streaming, they're getting into videos, they're getting into other things because they know that this won't always be here. And that's something, again, that's another lesson I think that businesses can learn, and I think even people can learn too, is learning to have a backup plan.
Man, social media 101 with Aaron Campbell. I love it. I'm learning a lot. Feeling excited here. So be on the lookout for Aaron at Card Hoarder, no longer just Nathaniel. So sorry, Nathaniel fans out there. You're going to have to be talking to somebody else at other points. I'm sure Nathaniel is going to still be tweeting. So that's what's on the horizon for Aaron Campbell. But let's briefly take a step back and talk about like your journey up to this point. If I remember correctly, you used to be a hardcore World of Warcraft player. Is that correct?
I sure was. When I stopped raiding seriously, I was in a US top 200 guild. So I was raiding 3 days a week, and I was spending an additional day or two a week just on raid prep. And it was intense. I was doing it pretty seriously. I didn't leave the house a whole lot. I was tethered to my computer, literally, and I was stuck to a headset and doing the thing. And it was a lot. And I just eventually grew to a point where I couldn't really do it anymore. And I wanted to live.
Man, that sounds like my lifestyle now with editing podcasts, but that's another topic for another day. So what drew you into Magic eventually? I mean, was it mainly the burnout, as it kind of sounded like, from World of Warcraft, or was it specifically like a quality from Magic that got you hooked?
Well, to be fair, Magic came first. I've been playing Magic since I was in junior high. My first Magic set was Ice Age. I go way back to the game. I was stealing money from my mother's purse to buy packs of Fallen Empires when I was a kid. Like, I had it bad. Okay. And so,
you were buying packs when I was. Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. So Fallen Empires and Ice Age are my first sets. And then, you know, came Alliances and Homelands. And I've been playing for a really long time. And so I stopped playing around Urza's Legacy just because I had turned 18 and I wanted to, like, you know, finish school and get a job and things like that. And then I came back around Innistrad Dark Ascension. So I was gone a long time, but Magic actually was first. And what really kind of brought me back to the game was I just missed people. You know, like I said, I was raiding 3 days a week. I had reached a point where all of my friends were online friends. And that's not to say that that's not real, but I wasn't going out with people my own age. I wasn't going to physical places. Everything we were doing was on Skype and Mumble. And I was literally just in this chair with these four bare walls every day. And I had also, I learned about things. I learned about opens and GPs. And at the time there were the TCG, the metal events, like gold events and bronze events. And I was like, hey, I can get out and socialize and do all these things. And that was really, really appealing to me because, you know, I'd been raiding for so long. And I just didn't want to be a shut-in anymore. And that was a really appealing thing for me. And being able to afford Magic certainly helped. You know, when I last played, I was a kid who couldn't afford anything. And I was a grown-up now. I could buy boxes. How cool is that? And so, you know, there were a number of reasons to come back, but primarily it was for social reasons because I just wasn't getting the interaction that I needed.
Sounds like a lot of similarities again with myself. Although, ironically, I got back into the game because of podcasts, actually. I was just like, I need some podcasts to listen to work. I'm like, I wonder if there's Magic podcasts. I haven't played that Magic game in a long time. And then I downloaded like 5 different ones. I was like, oh, this game sounds so wacky now. I need to get back into it. And yep, since I had a full-time job, got back into it. So
yeah. And how good does it feel to finally buy a box? I remember being a teenager and saving up all of my babysitting money to buy packs and being in awe of that one grown-up who could just buy a box. And I remember the first thing I did, I was 30. I went to the local game store and I was like, can I get a box of Innistrad, please? And then like the girl turned around to get the box and I was like, oh, and one of Dark Ascension. And it was just like, I felt like so baller to do that. And I, you know, 14-year-old me was very stoked.
Hold on, yeah. Hold on. You guys can afford to buy boxes?
Yeah.
Used to be.
Huh.
Have we already lost you, Dave?
I have to go rethink some life choices, but you guys just keep going ahead.
I mean, if you want corporate jobs or 9-to-5 jobs, go ahead. That's what they're for, right?
But I get boxes of Magic cards, right?
Yeah,
that's
okay.
What they pay you in.
Yeah, for a time. Sure. I mean, when the girlfriend bracket and the deck tees were going on, I was paid in store credit. And yeah, I paid for several decks that way.
Fair.
So going back to your World of Warcraft days, would you say you were involved like in that community like pretty dedicatedly? Or was it just like a casual thing?
Oh, no, I was blogging. I had a blog that I kept going for about 3 or 4 years. And I was also podcasting on the side, too. My very, very first podcast ever was a show called The 00 Podcast, which I did with my friend Ophelia, because her character was Ophelia and I was Estrus. And so we were both the O's. And it was so bad. We had like the James Bond theme as our intro, 00. Nice. And like, she's still one of my really good friends, actually. She just got married and she comes down from Canada to see me every once in a while. But yeah, I don't think I've ever been able to play a game without creating content. I remember I tried playing a game called Rift for a while, and I blogged about that too. Like, there's just something about, you know, kind of tracking what you're doing and reaching out to people through your hobby. Like I said, I've always created content. I've never just played a game. I've always had to do that on the side.
So what is involved with World of Warcraft content? Because I know like very little about the game, but it's just like podcasting about that game. Like, it doesn't seem, what do you talk about?
Well, we were both raiders. So my friend Ophelia and I, we both raided. And so we raided in different factions too. She was an Alliance Paladin and I was a Horde Druid. And so we would tell stories, you know, we would talk about how our raids went. And we would talk about what we're looking to do and the content that we were working on. And we would also have people on the show and talk about their experiences. I remember we did one episode about parenting, like what's it like to raid while having kids, you know, because I know that's really difficult to do. And we also had people on to talk about, you know, raiding in foreign guilds or overnight guilds and, you know, guild drama that can happen, what it's like being an officer, what it's like handing out loot and things of that nature. We really didn't have a shortage of things to talk about. It never really, you know, it never really got boring.
Right. No, it actually sounds great. I mean, compared to other games, because I tried to think about other games that I play too. I'm like, what content would I produce for this? Because I think that's what Magic has a significant advantage in, is in you have so many things you can kind of pull from, like, ooh, look at this new deck I'm working on, or whatever. Other games, it's like, yeah, I play Rocket League or Overwatch, and it's like, here's how you get good. There's nothing like lore. There's no like sweet deck choices you can talk about. It's like, yeah, I play this character. Here's how you can do this kind of like technique well or whatever. Yeah.
Back in the day, we also used to do what was called theory crafting. Shout out to Elitist Jerks. For those who know me, I used to have an Elitist Jerks email for the longest time. Elitist Jerks was a forum, a bulletin board based on World of Warcraft, where people would do theory crafting and people would really break down sort of the mechanics and the math behind your numbers. So, you know, when you cast a spell in World of Warcraft, your spell heals for X amount or does Y amount of damage. And you can really eventually learn the formulas and determine like which one really is best for you. And then you get gear that sort of augments your abilities, like your spell power. And again, there's math for that too. And so I was one of those people that would really break down, like, is this ring better than this ring? Does it really give you this much healing? You know, does this healing spell do more in this situation than this one? I was one of those people. And we really don't see too much theory crafting anymore. But back in the day, that was something I definitely wrote about, of, you know, what gear do you want to use? What do you want your rotation to be? You know, do you want to be healing with certain kinds of people? Because I was a healer. That was really what I talked about.
Awesome. So yeah, you tend to go deep. I can see a trend here. Because when you get into, when you start a interview podcast called The Deck Tease, which I was a huge fan of, as I said earlier, I tried checking the old archives. Did you start the podcast in 2012 or 2013-ish? Somewhere around there?
I want to say 2012. God, that was so long ago, which really isn't. But yeah, I don't remember.
So was there a particular inspiration for starting that kind of cast? I mean, it seems like you've always been a fan of the interview style format.
Well, it actually didn't start out that way. So when I first started doing the show, it was really meant to be just sort of documenting my journey back to Magic. I was actually inspired by a World of Warcraft podcast called The Mana Cooler, which was hosted by a guy named George. And he would do mini episodes, which I'd never heard of before. And so he would do like little 10-minute shows where he would just talk about things he was doing in World of Warcraft, where he would be like, hey, I worked on my jewel crafting today. Or like, you know, the following week, it'd be like, hey, I went to the auction house today. And he was just sort of documenting the things that he was doing in the game. And my first couple episodes was like my first PTQ, my first Gen Con, my first two-headed giant, my first pre-release and things like that.
I miss these episodes, so I guess that's why.
Yeah, they were rough, like really rough. Like, yeah, even I kind of groan where I'm like, oh, girl. So then right around episode 10 or maybe episode 20, I started meeting people in the community. And my first guest ever was Brandon Weiscotten. He used to write for Gathering Magic. And he and I just had a conversation and people really, really liked that. They were like, hey, you guys got along really well. You should have more people on. And so at first I started having people on just from my immediate circle. So I had Darwin Castle on, who I was a really big fan of. And then it just kind of snowballed where, like, you know, Darwin turned into Kibler, who turned into Finkel, who turned into Kai, who turned into, you know, Paul Reitzel, and it just snowballed. And before I knew it, I was having LSV on the show. Helen Bergio was coming on the show. I was close with Watsi PR. You know, I could pretty much have anybody on at one point, and it was a blur. Like, it all just happened so fast.
Who was your favorite person, you think, to interview?
Oh, goodness. Probably Brad Nelson. Like, you know, Brad Nelson has charisma for days. Like, there are people who, being a good Magic player does not necessarily lend itself to being entertaining, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times there are people who are good at Magic, but they're not necessarily the best writers, or they're just not necessarily, you know, entertaining. You know, like, you can't necessarily have a good conversation with them. They're not unpleasant, you know, they're not mean or anything like that, but they're just not the chattiest of people, the things of that nature. But Brad's one of those people where he just has it. I don't even remember us really sticking to the notes on that one. Like, he just ran away with it. It was like a tennis match of, like, you know, our conversation where I would put the ball in his court, he would smack it back in mine. And he was so funny and so off the cuff, and he just has personality for days. And he's one of those people where, you know, when you see him become popular, he's just the package. You know, he's good at the game, great guy, nice guy, but just funny. And he just gets it, doesn't miss a beat. And as an interviewer, that's really just a prize, you know, because there have been some interviews where you have to kind of pull teeth on, and he just wasn't one of them. Like, I remember he just knocked it out of the park and even made me kind of rise to the occasion. And he's got it. Like, there's just no doubt about it.
Yep. Yeah. Not surprised. I live with Brad. That's pretty much him.
But there are some people that, you know, you do see them become popular and you might wonder why, you know, to be completely honest. You know, I remember when I was doing the community super, the community cup, and Sean Plott was on my team. And before I had done the community cup, I didn't understand why he was popular. I'll freely admit that. I was like,
really?
Why are we? Yeah, I didn't.
Did you like watch any of his stuff or anything?
I did. And I just didn't get it. Like, it just wasn't for me. And so I remember when he was on the team, I was definitely one of the naysayers. And I remember when the Pro Tour invite happened and people were like, who is this guy? Why is Wizards plugging him? You know, why are they forcing him down our throats? But until I actually like spent time with him, and then it made sense. And I was like, this guy has it. And he's got that something that not a lot of people have. But after spending, you know, 4 days with him, I get it. And now I completely understand. And some people are just like that. You know, they just have that charisma that, you know, can really take you there.
Yeah, humble brags. You got to hang out with Day 9.
Yes, he's awesome.
That team was stacked. It was like Paul Chian and who man, you had
Tom
a great
Ross,
team to be on.
We had Scotty McCullum on the show formerly from the A team. So it was Tom, Paul, Frank Lepore. We had my friend Bjorn on with us, and our friend Mariah and me.
Right.
And yeah, it was a wonderful time. And I have a lot of fond memories about that. And that's actually going to be featured in my, I'm working on a blog post to announce my position. And I plan on talking about the Community Cup in there because it was one of the best things I've ever done in my entire life. And I have nothing but fond memories of it.
So for your other experiences, you went on to host the Girlfriend Bracket that ran for 100 episodes, I believe.
Yep.
I've gotten some things wrong.
No, we cut off exactly at 100.
Okay. I was just making sure I was correct there. And currently, you're one of the co-hosts on Magic Mics with Evan Irwin and Ruben Ressler. So has your approach for podcasting changed since you're now a co-host instead of a host?
In what sense?
Do you find like yourself as a person, like kind of differently? Do you act a certain way? Is your preparation a little different? Because I mean, it has to be challenging to keep the excitement level down from Evan, the sarcasm to a minimum with Ruben. Like I know firsthand, I've sat with these two many times. They've argued for 40 minutes of what like cards to cut from Evan's cube. Like you have to like wire these two individuals down. I can imagine. So like I imagine this was like a tough project to get into. Like it must have been like a much different project from your other ones.
No, actually, I found it very easy to get into. If anything, I feel like I've kind of earned it. With the deck tees, I had to do everything by myself. And to be fair, that was my choice. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, put that on anybody or get anyone to feel bad for me. But, you know, I worked really hard on the deck tees. You know, I put out over 100 episodes. I came up with all the questions. I wrestled up all the guests. You know, it was a one woman show and that was really exhausting. And then, you know, working with the Girlfriend Bracket, you know, we had a lot of opportunities open up for us that were also exhausting. You know, we were doing Community Super League, and we were streaming and we were doing Patreon hangouts and we were traveling, you know, and rustling up, you know, three other people and myself. I was doing the bulk of the editing as well. You know, I worked really hard on those two shows. And so to do a show like Magic Mike's where I can kind of relaxed a little bit. You know, Evan is, I'm fortunate that Evan does a lot of the editing. You know, he handles a lot of the behind the scenes things, you know, to where I really just have to show up and talk. You know, I don't have to edit. You know, I promote when I feel like it, you know, but the bulk of the work is it's mostly Evan's baby. And so, you know, I tend to look at Magic Mics as sort of my reward for my hard work, you know, where I spent, you know, 2 to 4 years really grinding these two technically difficult shows, you know, not difficult in any other sense, but, and this is sort of my reward for doing so, where I am at a point now where I can just show up one night a week, now two nights, you know, just talk and log off, you know, that's it. And that's something I feel that I deserve for working as hard as I did for so long.
It sounds like you get it a lot, Aaron. You get the content game and what you have to do to develop yourself in it. And it sounds like you've worked hard to get very good at what, you are very good at what you do. It sounds like you've worked very hard for it. Have you found that developing yourself professionally in this way has helped you develop personally as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, when you become a visible personality, you know, you do kind of find yourself under a microscope and you do find yourself asking a lot of questions, you know, when you become visible. You know, there were definitely times where like you, and again, I'm not trying to sound like I want anyone, you know, to feel bad for me or anything, but there's no rule book on how to handle visibility. You know, we talked a little bit earlier on the show on how pros deal with that, where you're suddenly thrust into this position where you have to promote yourself and all this stuff, you know, and likewise, you know, when your show takes off, there's no guidebook on how to deal with that. You know, you just sort of have to make it up as you go along. And sometimes you make mistakes and you have to kind of learn from that. And, you know, I've definitely made plenty of mistakes and I've definitely had to look at myself in different lights. And, you know, you definitely have to, you know, just kind of keep yourself grounded and keep yourself in check. And that involves, you know, introspection and things like that. And so, yeah, I've definitely grown a lot through doing the show. And in fact, you know, one of the reasons that I haven't brought the deck tees back is because I kind of cringe when I think about it. You know, like there are things I said on that show that I probably wouldn't have said to those people nowadays, you know, that might have been a little problematic or just, you know, going a little too far. And so I'm not even sure I would call it the deck tees, to be quite honest. You know, I'm 34 years old. You know, I was 29 when I started it, you know, but I've grown a lot in that time. And there's just certain things I wouldn't have said or I would have handled differently. And that's honestly the main reason why I've struggled with bringing back the deck tees is I wouldn't know how. Like, I wouldn't want to make the same choices that I made 4 years ago.
So as for Aaron, the Magic player, you're well known for your love of Dredge and complete utter distaste for Graveyard Hate. What drew you to Dredge and, or I should say maybe umbrella it as graveyard decks or whatever? Was there a particular iteration of the archetype that you found that you were like fond of, or did you see someone play it and you had like your sort of like aha moment?
So my first ever modern deck was Living End. I remember I wanted to get into modern and I discovered Travis Wu on Channel Fireball and he had written a budget list for Living End for people who couldn't afford fetches because fetches were more expensive than they are now back then and Fulminator Mages were expensive. And so he had thrown together this list with like the, you know, some Pain Lands and some Avalanche Riders and it didn't seem like a really big commitment to get into it. So I assembled this list and I had been playing Standard for a really long time. I had never really done anything unfair before. And that was sort of my first taste of doing broken things, you know, being able to completely invert the board state, you know, and take a board state, put it in exile, bring back the graveyard, then put the exile in the graveyard. That blew my mind at that point. And it's really hard to go back to playing fair decks once you've had a taste of something forbidden like that. And from there, I started playing Ad Nauseam, which is where you go to like negative 53, draw your whole deck and basically throw your lands at people. And it's really hard to go back to playing Thraben Inspectors after that. It's just not something I can do. And so, you know, it kind of like, you know, I felt like my tolerance got a little higher where it was like, okay, we've done the Living End thing. We've done the Ad Nauseam thing. What else is there? You know, I can't go back. I can't go back to playing Tarmogoyfs. I can't go back to playing a Delver of Secrets. I've sipped from the nectar of the gods, so to speak. And so I started looking around at other things. And I remember I was watching, it was Eternal Weekend. I'll never forget it. And I was watching the stream and I had seen Vintage Dredge, and I kid you not, I literally wanted to cry. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Sullivan Brophy had like 90% of his graveyard on the board, and the commentators were just trying to weed through it all. And I was like, like I heard Belinda Carlisle in my head, like Heaven on Earth. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I was like, but I want to do that. And I just like the fact that it breaks all of the rules. You know, we're taught so many things in Magic. You know, we're taught that you can only draw one card a turn. Dredge effectively draws more than one, you know, per card per turn. If you're lucky and have a dredger in the yard, you know, we're taught that you have to play lands and those lands have to produce mana. And most of what Dredge does doesn't involve paying mana. You know, most of that is triggers like Ikarid, Bloodghast, Bridge from Below, things like that. It just flies in the face of everything everything that magic is. And, you know, when you've had a taste of that, you know, why would you want to play fair, you know? And so, so I love Storm and I love Doomsday and I love, you know, just really broken things. And I can't think of anything more broken than Dredge.
Well, I'm just sorry to say, I love casting my Thraben Inspectors. you know, this is where we differ,
yeah,
and this is where we part
ways.
You're
friends with Thalia, and I don't really see it for her.
We're more than friends, I'm sorry.
Is
you know
she
I
your
have
wife?
Art of Thalia right above me right now.
You did allude to being married earlier in the show. Did you and Thalia make it official? Just
maybe. Did I say that? Oh, man. But so I've seen your disapproval on your Twitter feed for the recent graveyard hate that Wizards has printed. So don't pick on Thalia too much. I know her and some of my graveyard hate will tilt you off at times. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I get it. Like, I understand that I'm doing broken things, and you know, I understand that if we didn't have those sort of safety valves, you know, we would be decks like mine would be running amok. So I understand on some fundamental level.
Do you think WotC has done a better job of printing graveyard hate, or are you still still like 100% on the other side? No, WotC can do no right.
So realistically, I understand. You know, I understand that graveyard decks are very powerful, but I also understand that Wizards has been very vocal about the fact that mechanics like Dredge and Storm were mistakes, to be quite honest. And so they're very afraid of those mistakes kind of being repeated again. You know, you can see it sometimes in terms of newer cards. You know, if you look at Theros, we had a 4-mana Whip of Erebos, and now we get a 7-mana God Pharaoh's Gift. You know, you can kind of see, you get kind of an indication of what Wizards is okay with by the cards that they release and how much they cost and how powerful they are. You know, we haven't had a good mana dork since, like, what, Sylvan, what was the...
Yeah, Sylvan Caryatid, Elvis, we don't have Elvish Mystic anymore.
We're never going to get that again. You know, we're never going to have a Llanowar Elves again or a Birds of Paradise again. You know, you can kind of see where they're steering the boat. And so, you know, when it comes to graveyard decks, you know, they're definitely, I feel like I've definitely seen them kind of putting their foot down where, you know, we're not going to have Abzan Reanimator like we did in Standard. We're not going to have Whip of Erebos like we had in Theros. God Pharaoh's Gift is really what we get. We get Ever After, you know what I mean? Which is like a 7-mana reanimation spell or something, you know? And so I understand on the one hand that there is an audience for cards like that, but I also think some of it comes from maybe just a little bit of a personal, you know, attitude that kind of style of play is not where they want people to be. You know, they want people to be playing with creatures that they cast, you know, on the board and things like that. And like I said, I get it, but it doesn't mean I have to necessarily like it.
Okay. I'll let you know, though, I'm a closet graveyard supporter.
Okay.
Glissa the Traitor, she's one of my favorite commander decks.
Ooh.
So I do love playing with some graveyard. Okay. I do. I understand the breaking the rules excitement type thing.
Oh,
like,
man.
I got into playing Splinter Twin. I never thought I would play a blue deck, but once I started playing Splinter Twin, I was like, ooh, I can get into this. All right, cool.
Do you play Commander at all?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. If you really want to do broken things with Izzet colors, you need to build a Locust God deck, because I built one the other day and I killed somebody with Molten Psyche and Impact Tremors. And it was, I felt like baby Simba being held up to the light. It was the greatest feeling ever.
Yeah, that sounds like an Izzet deck in Commander.
Yeah, it's good
stuff. Blue-red decks are so broken. It's... I like refuse to play blue in Commander. That's just my style.
Yeah, it was an accident too. I accidentally killed two people in my pot. I was playing on Moto, and I went to look down and like type something, and I looked up and there were just two blank spaces, and I was like, "Wait, where'd they go?" And they were like, "Yeah, you killed us." And I was like, "Oh my god!"
I could see that putting me on tilt. Blue decks. That's the graveyard for me is blue decks sometimes.
Mm.
But as far as tilt, I know on the deck tease you talked about you dealing with tilt a lot. And is this something that you still deal with personally, or I shouldn't say personally, but as when playing Magic? I know I've seen you stream before and it seems like you've maybe improved a little bit. That's just me from my perspective, though.
Yeah, I've definitely improved quite a bit. I've been very open about the fact that that's something I struggle with. You know, some people aren't the best deck builders. You know, some people play too slow or they play too fast. You know, the monkey on my back has always been the fact that I struggle with my emotions and I struggle with dealing with loss and I struggle with finding productive ways to deal with the fact that I've made mistakes. You know, a lot of the times when I'm dealing with a loss poorly, it's because ultimately I punted. You know, I made a mistake that cost me the game and my way of dealing with it was to lash out or to sort of vent at people. And I've come a long way. You know, I don't think I'm out of the woods yet. You know, I definitely slip up. And when I do, I'm very quick to apologize for it and to address it to where it doesn't leave with me when I leave an event. But I think it's something worth discussing. You know, I think it's an interesting topic, you know, the idea of being able to show emotion in magic. You know, we kind of saw it a couple years ago when Ari Lax won that pro tour and he was really stoked and people called him a monster for it. There were literal posts that were like, is Ari Lax a monster? And I was like, what? And we saw it recently too with Paulo. You know, Paulo won a pro tour and didn't necessarily emote very much. And he got criticized for that. And so it's a really weird topic in magic where, you know, how much emotion should we be showing? Is some acceptable? Is none acceptable? You know, you have people who would prefer it if we were all just sort of robots and we all sort of looked at it like, you know, the just a transaction, if you will. And then you have people that like to, that do believe that, you know, the personal side, you should be allowed to express excitement. You should be able to communicate that you, you know, the good game argument, you know, when someone says good game and you didn't draw land for five turns and you lost to Boggles, that's not a good game, you know. Should you be allowed to express that? Or should you just sort of smile and be like, yep, this was fun? And I think it's a really interesting topic. I would love to see some more discussion about it. Whenever I see an article about Tilt, it's usually boiled down to, well, just don't do it. And it's like, well, that's not enough. Like that's not good. That's not helping anyone.
Well, we're human.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I, you know, it's definitely something I struggle with. I've been very open about it. I've certainly apologized when necessary, you know, when I've really looked back and been like, I could have really handled this better, you know, but I also think there were times that, you know, I think things might've been blown out of proportion, you know. One of the things I really struggle with is when you're dealing with a loss and somebody's immediately putting their hand on your face and saying, good game. Sometimes I just need a minute, you know, and it's not personal. But if I say, I just need a minute, you know, and I do turn down that handshake, a lot of times it's turned into, you know, oh my God. And I've even seen it on streams before too, where sometimes you just need a minute. And so there is, I think, room for discussion regarding how we process loss, how we deal with losing, how we deal with winning. And I just wish more people were willing to talk about it because I feel like it really gets boiled down into very simplistic terms sometimes.
Yeah, Dave, I'm gonna turn it towards you because you have a certain meter on your stream. It's a Tilt meter, right?
I've removed it because I live my entire life continuously tilted, so I think it's a bit it's a bit superfluous if I'm just always tilted. So
yeah,
Tilt is definitely a hard thing to deal with. I find I deal with it a bit better in person, but I'm saying that as a person that's now been playing G's for way too long on the competitive scene, and now I'm pretty fine with it, and I can take it, and like I'm never rude to an opponent. I'll vent maybe to friends, or I'll go be grumpy in a corner for a couple of hours, or my natural habit of I'll eat a ton of food until I feel better. But I know in the past that I've been rude to people inadvertently, just, you know, a bit cold at the table, and that's not something I enjoy about myself. That's not something I want someone to remember. There's two people that are good friends of mine that know me, and some of their first experiences in Magic through me was me being angry about the game we just played. Not outwardly, not shouting at anyone or being super rude, but just having a big puss on me and just obviously not thinking that I deserve to lose. So that is not something I want people to see about me. You know, that is not a high point. And I think a large part of Magic should be dealt with like poker, where it's all numbers. It should be irrelevant. We take losses more personally as Magic players because an overall tournament means something. It isn't like poker where I'm just trying to accumulate the most amount of money at the end of my career, right? It is, we take individual tournaments more personally, but we should probably take more leaves out of poker's book and think of it like that. You know, I am only going to win at the very best, at the top echelon of Magic. Maybe what, 72% is an outstanding season and the guy wins player of the year or girl wins player of the year. If I'm winning 65% of my games, I can't get mad at the 35% I lose. It shouldn't be a thing I do. And I do agree with Aaron. I think there should be a lot more discussions about it. And I absolutely hate when someone's like, just don't be mad. I'm like, if it was that simple, then I'd be great at Magic. You know, then I'd be able to shrug this stuff off. That's like me going, watching you play Magic and say, why would you not just make the right play? Why not just be good? You know, they're both mental aspects of a game. And one of them might be slightly more controllable than others, but temperament is really difficult. You know, there's a whole profession, which is sports psychology.
Yeah.
Which, you know, people get paid a lot of money to go to top athletes and talk about this stuff and try and get them into correct mindsets. In fact, there's someone, I've completely forgotten his name, that does sports psychology-esque articles on Channel Fireball. And I think they're really good and they're dismissed by a lot.
Will Jonathan.
Yes. And I think they're pretty good. They're not exactly, you know, if you've looked into sports psychology or been into sports for a long time, they're not exactly groundbreaking kind of notions. Mm-hmm. But they're there, and a lot of Magic players dismiss that, and that's silly. It's just downright stupid.
Okay. I'll definitely check them out, because, I mean, I'm not an angel when it comes to tilting off either. Usually I do it in the privacy of my own home, though. I can only be alone, swearing and banging my table.
I don't know,
table.
Connor. I do remember that one match at GP Tupelo 3 years ago, and I swear I wouldn't tell anybody.
No, in person, I'm a saint. I really dial it back.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think the analogy that you mentioned, Dave, with poker is really good. You know, I think that we can definitely take away something with that too. But, you know, going back to a question that you asked me earlier, you know, how has being a podcaster sort of improved me as a person? You know, it forces you to be introspective, you know, and one of the things that specifically the tilt thing really forced me to do was look at myself. And one of the triggers that I have, you know, or one of the things that I found really kind of set me off was I was doing things I didn't love to do. And, you know, you mentioned why I love Dredge so much. I find that when I'm playing things I love and playing events that I love, I'm less likely to be sassy. You know, when I was at my worst, I was just doing everything for the wrong reasons. You know, I was playing
standard, right?
But and I don't mean any shame by it, but like I was playing standard because I don't have much of a local scene. And so it was like when that's the only event you're getting, you feel most obligated to play it. You know, so I was playing a lot of formats I didn't really enjoy. I was playing decks I didn't enjoy. I was reading articles telling me if you play this deck, nothing's going to go wrong, and then everything would go wrong. I'll be honest, I was hanging out with people I didn't necessarily enjoy hanging out with. And so one of my biggest things, you know, one of the reasons I do lean in really hard towards Dredge recently is because I love doing it. I love playing ad nauseum, and I've gotten a lot better at just doing things I love to do. If I really don't want to play modern, I'm not going to play modern. If I really don't want to play this deck, I'm not going to play this deck. And I found that a lot of my issues got better when I stuck to things I loved doing. And I was at my worst when I was doing things I hated. And that was a really big help for me. And again, I had to sort of look inside to determine that. But that's something I think a lot of people can't do or won't do. And it was big for me. And I probably wouldn't have done that if I wasn't visible. Like if I was just an everyday Magic player, I don't know if I would have taken that opportunity to look within.
Yeah, certainly even stuff like streaming. I've caught stuff like streaming. You just want to be the best at something you can be, and that results in you being the best person you can be, because mm-hmm. So for streaming, I got to look at how I talk, how I act, how I interact with other people. And a game I got quite tilted, and when I tilt, sometimes I tell my in those games, and everyone's had them, you point out every mistake your opponent is making.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, I should have lost 5 turns ago. What is this person doing? That's another mistake. I can't believe I have an out for another turn. Oh my god, I can't believe I have a turd out. Oh, I can't believe I have a fort out. What's this person doing? And I did this on a stream before, and, you know, if someone talked about me like that, I wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. If I caught a streamer doing it, I'd find it even a little funny. But I talked about someone like this, and they were a viewer, and they let me know. You know, they messaged me a couple days later. They're like, oh, I went to see the replay. I was so excited. You're one of my favorite streamers. And you just bad-mouthed me for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's super embarrassing. That's not a person I want to be. And while I'm trying to improve my content, I obviously don't ever want someone that watches my stream to feel bad about something I said about them. Yeah, it's a cross section of improving life as a human being, but also trying to get good at your profession.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of this game. It's you can find something that really sparks your interest, makes you happy, whatever you want to call it. You know, Aaron, you were talking about, you know, formats that you enjoyed. I want to transition to over a format that that's been particularly interest you lately, so that's Vintage. And recently you were invited to play in the Vintage Super League,
mm-hmm.
which includes Hall of Fame talent like, you know, Eric Froelich, Paul Rietzel, Dave Williams, Reed Duke, you know, those nobodies, whatever. Was the VSL something that you pursued, or did Randy Buehler get a hold of you?
A little bit of both. You know, I have a great appreciation for Vintage. I've been playing it for the least amount of time out of everybody in the league right now. I have a lot of respect for the format. It's some of the most fun I've had playing Magic that I can remember. Randy had sort of inquired on Twitter, like, who are some people that you'd like to see or whatever? And I was like, well, you know, if I practice a little more and I get a little more experience under my belt, I would love to join you sometime. And I work with Randy during the Community Super League, and he's great. Out of the blue, one night, he sent me a message, and he was so funny. He goes, would you still want to do the VSL if you could only play Dredge once? And I took that to mean that, like, there were qualifiers and he thought I wasn't going to win. Like, that's the way that I interpreted it. And I was like, what is that supposed to mean? And he goes, no. He's like, I didn't mean it like that. He's like, I took a poll on Twitter, and like the number one criticism was that people were tired of seeing the same decks. He was like, so if you come on, he's like, we all need to agree that we're going to play different decks, because that's something the viewers don't really like to see. And I was like, oh, well then, yeah, I would totally love to. And so he was like, great. And, you know, he was really looking looking for people who play vintage but could also do coverage if they need to, because you are going to spend, you know, a good portion of your night that you're on also covering the other matches. You need to make sure that, you know, he wanted to make sure that he had people that were entertaining and that could handle that. And obviously I can. And so he asked if I was interested, and I said yes. And before I know it, I'm in, and I'm just like, oh my God. And I'm so just humbled and flattered. And I just see these names and the fact that, you know, Rich Shea knows who I am. I'm just like, I can't believe it. And it's such a big thrill for me, and I'm really looking forward to it. My first match is on the 26th.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll put information in the show notes, of course. But I have to ask, though, is this all just a ploy so you can play against or maybe even commentate with the Dark Knight himself? I'm talking about Reed Duke, of course.
It's Reed Duke, hashtag Baywatch. Yeah, that's another thing that Randy brought up. He was like, now I remember. He's like, if you agree to do this, he was like, you have to. He said something about like having a no drooling clause. He was like, you might do coverage. And I was like, Randy, I can be professional. I was like, I wasn't raised in a barn. I was like, you
Aaron,
know,
that hair, though.
Don't remind me. Yeah, I've met him on several occasions, and I immediately revert to a 14-year-old girl. It's great.
I do too. Reed's great.
Oh God, he's just so nice. Like, you just can't. And just, he makes jewelry, and he does sit-ups in his garage. Like, there's just nothing to hate about him. But yeah, so when we agreed to do this, he was like, you know, I think he's like, try to be as professional as you can. And I was like, I got this. And so, but inside, I'm kind of dying a little bit at the idea of facing him. But no, I think it's gonna be a really good time. The way that they have it set up this year is they have three pods of four. So the first pod happened last week, and that was Kevin, Reed, Tagoris, and Rich. So they played last week, and everybody plays everybody. And then this coming pod, it's Rachel, Randy, Steven Menendian, and Eric Froelich. And so then my pod is going to be me, Paul Rietzel, Bob Maher, and Dave Williams. And so I'll get to play all of them my first week. I know, right? And then, so the idea is that everybody plays everybody. You know, there's not really any qualifiers per se. But we did agree that we're all going to play different decks. And so I'm playing three different decks. I can tell you guys my first deck, which I haven't revealed publicly yet.
Ooh.
You want to hear that?
Is it going to be activating Bizarre Baghdad?
No. I can't play Dredge my first week. That's too predictable. That's like returning to the crime scene. You can't do that. No, my first deck. So I registered Dragon Stompy.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
For those who don't know, I hate red so much, I haven't even hung up the basic mountain.
You're killing me on all fronts. Like, I like basic mountains, Cast and Thalia, Rest in Peace. Like, what is?
Well, so I chose that deck for two reasons. One, I wanted to choose something that was very far away from Dredge, because I think a lot of people assume that I'm just going to jam it every week, and I can't do that. We agreed to play different decks. And, you know, the other reason I picked it is just because sometimes a turn one Blood Moon is a great thing to do. And, you know, when you're able to play with Black Lotus and Mox Ruby and things like that, I think the best play I ever got off was I had a turn one Chandra, Torch of Defiance, and then I plused her to make a Null Rod on turn one. It just has a lot of cards that are very good in a vacuum, you know, Trinisphere, Chalice of the Void, Magus of the Moon, Goblin Rabble Master, Scab Clan Berserker is a card for the Storm deck, Sulfur Elemental. It just has a lot of really strong cards that I think answer things that are happening in the format right now. And so it's very unusual for me, you know, if we're going to talk about going outside your comfort zone, this is it. And so I'm definitely delivering that. And I'm also delivering some really good cards that are, you know, pretty easy for me to pilot. So let's hope I do well my first week.
Yeah, good luck. I will be watching.
And, yeah.
Any sweet main deck tech?
So we mixed it up a little bit. The list that I found was from a list back in March that a young man had top-aided a vintage challenge with. And we just made some substitutions in terms of the mana. We added a Black Lotus and a Ruby, which he didn't have in his list. I cut down the number of Sulfur Elementals. Just overall, I think he was running four. And with the new restriction, we kind of cut it down a little bit. Hazoret. There's two copies of Hazoret in the main, which is awesome. You know, that's always the card that the vintage folks have to read. They're just like, what? Like, because most of them don't pay attention to new sets, you know? I have two copies of Hazoret in the main. I have four copies of Fiery Confluence. Sin Prodder has certainly done work. You know, that's another card that people are like,
yeah, that was a weird one I saw pop up.
Yeah, that card does work. And so, so there's some spicy meatballs there. But overall, I think it's a really strong deck. The one card that was actually really disappointing that I thought would be kind of a shoo-in was Harsh Mentor. Kind of underperformed for me. Like, it didn't really carry its weight.
Yeah.
Can't wait to check that out. So before we sign off, it is customary to ask the guests their thoughts on Magic Online, or now we should say Digital Magic, because MTG Arena is now revealed. So I would like to ask you, what would you like to see from Wizards with Digital Magic? So either Magic Online, Arena, how to handle both. Like, what would you like to see from Wizards?
My requests are very simple. I know every once in a while somebody will tweet out something and they're like, you know, what would you like to see for Magic Online? And you see these very thoughtful responses that are like, you know, I would like the prize structure to be revolved around the X and the Y. And they go into formulas, and you have the one guy that's like, you know, I would like the rules engine to do blah. And for me, it's like, I just want to pick my tokens. Like, I'm just tired of having ugly tokens. So, you know, if that's a feature that Arena can give me or Magic Online can give me, I'm tired of looking at my ugly spirits when I'm playing Forbidden Orchard. I'm tired of playing ugly zombies. Just let me make my tokens. Like, let me choose my tokens. Give me the playmat option. Do you remember when you could make your playmat in Modo?
That was one of my suggestions.
Just let me customize some things. Like, that's really all I want. Like, I'm sure that there's things that are necessary on the back end, but I just want things to be pretty. And right now, I kind of die inside whenever I play certain cards because I'm like, oh, I'm going to play these ugly spirits and just, ugh, I'm just, my soul hurts. And so I just want to make it pretty.
Are you concerned at all with Eternal formats? I mean, now we've seen Legacy kind of getting cut down on, you know, a Wizard's end, but now we're maybe having some doubt of Eternal formats on Magic Online because now we have Arena coming and we don't really know for certain like where Eternal Form. I mean, obviously we're gonna have Eternal formats on Magic Online for years and years probably, but like we don't know if year five, like what is that gonna look like for Legacy, Vintage? Like what are we gonna do? Like, do you have concerns with that?
I kind of want to talk about Modern for a second because I know that there's some, okay. Not everybody agrees that that's, and some people would argue that's not an eternal format, you know, quote unquote, but
sure,
Modern is more popular than Standard right now. Like you can't deny that. And so, you know, with Arena kind of focusing on Standard, I'm really curious what that means for Modern because, you know, you saw them giving us back a Modern Pro Tour, you know, you can't deny that Modern is hot right now. And so I think there's definitely room to talk about what's going to happen with Legacy and Vintage, but I think we also need to think about what's going to happen with Modern because, you know, there's been some talk about, well, is Magic Online eventually going to, you know, fold? You know, if Arena does really well, how are you going to integrate 15,000 cards in all the rules interactions and everything like that if you do start to add the older formats worth of cards? And I think it's definitely something that needs to happen at some point. Like, I don't think you can do Arena. I'm not really sure. I think if anything does save Magic Online, though, it's the fact that Modern is still going to be there because Modern is really hot right now. And even if you just add Modern legal cards, that's still a pretty hefty burden for a rules engine to have to be able to carry and support. And so that's really what I'm kind of, I think that's going to be sort of the deal breaker for me, or sort of the deciding factor is what happens with Modern. Because if you just keep Modern, Legacy, and Vintage on Magic Online, I think that can work. But I'm really anxious to see what they do with Modern. Like, I'm more interested in that.
Okay. Dave, do you have any final questions?
No, I want to thank you for being on the cast, Aaron, and I want to congratulate you on the job again. And after this interview, I'm super excited to see what you come up with and how the Cardholder brand's going to develop.
Oh, thank you. And it's nice to finally talk to you, Dave. I've certainly seen you around and your accent is delightful.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we tease Dave a little bit, but he's our favorite Irishman for sure.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm Irish. I'm of Irish heritage. I have the red hair and the freckles and all that that's stuff. True. And so I appreciate that quite a bit.
Me too. I mean, my name, if you look at my name,
Uduno.
Take a guess of what nationality I come from. So.
I'm going to go with Senegalese. No? Okay.
No. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Aaron, where can our listeners get a hold of the new Cardholder Community Manager, and when can they see you play on the Vintage Super League?
Oh, goodness. So you can primarily find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter account is @OriginalEstrus, which is OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com, twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus, Skype @OriginalEstrus, Snapchat @OriginalEstrus. My Reddit handle is OriginalEstrus. It's pretty much me if you ever see OriginalEstrus anywhere. My first night on Vintage Super League is next Tuesday, so be sure to check me out and root for me because I'm going to need a lot of help. And that's really about it. I pride myself on being pretty accessible. I'm pretty good about replying to emails and tweets and things of that nature, so definitely come say hello. I've got some events lined up. I'll be at Vintage. I'll be at Eternal Weekend in October. I'll be at Regionals in November, which is SCG Regionals Modern. I travel quite a bit, and I usually tweet that I do, so definitely come say hi. I usually have stickers and, you know, free swag with me everywhere I go.
Awesome. I might see you at Regionals. We will see.
You gonna bring Thalia?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you can leave her in the car. Just
No. Her and Thraben Inspector, they're gonna be their best buddies, so they have to show up together. I'm sorry.
Oh man.
For me, hit me up on Twitter @ConnorPOdonnell. Dave, where can our listeners get a hold of you?
They can find me on Twitch, 4 or 5 days a week. That's at Dave C. That's S-E-A. You can find me on Twitter. If you want to talk about anything we talked about on the cast today, and just follow my magic shenanigans. It's at Dave C89, again, S-E-A. And you check out Troll Traders articles, English website. I've written my second piece there. I also have a modern cube, went up a couple days ago. Ooh. Looking at Ixalan and a few of the cards that are like very similar to old favorites.
I'll put that in the show notes as well. Aaron, thanks again for being on the show. Awesome episode. Good luck with the new position. I think you're going to kill it.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope I do a good job. Like, I definitely don't want to let anybody down. And I just really want to, I just want everyone to be happy for me. And I want it to all work out. And I just want it to all work out.
I think it will.
Yeah.
All right. I think that will wrap up this episode. Remember, you can find the show every week on cardhoarder.com. Next week, we'll be talking about week one of Ixalan out on Magic Online. But until then, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.